Thank you very much, and I would like to thank the organizer for the invitation. So it is a sort of a survey that I want to introduce a few main ideas and applications of that.
Switch
on the mic. No, it is on. Yeah. Usually it doesn't work, but. Okay, so here are the definitions. So I get a set or the sequence in an abelian group, and I look at all partial sums, right? So those are the subset sum. I look at a finite subset and take the sum. There are two related notions people usually consider is that a sum set, so you take a set and take all sum of L elements. Right, and another one is that you take also these L elements, but you require them to be different. So I denoted by L star of A. So there are trivial relations saying that okay, the star sum is inside the L sum, and the subsum set is just the union of the star sums. So usually the treatment of the star sum is very close to the treatment of the SA set. On the other hand, if you remove the star, the situation usually becomes much easier. So here is sort of a trivial example just to make you comfortable with the definition. So. Yeah, so the set A is there, you can check for yourself that, well, 2A is, you can add, well, you can add 0 with 0, so that's why you have 0 there. For the star sum, you cannot add 0 with 0, so that's why you have to start with 1. Somewhat more interesting is the third example when we talk about a sequence. So in the sequence, I allow the elements to be repeated, right? So for instance, 3A here, I can add 1 and 1 and 1 with each cell 3 times, so I get the number 3. On the other hand, on the star sum, I have only one possibility, right? I can add 1 with 1 with 9, so I get 11. And in the subset sum, I get this element. And you can see that the 3A is quite different from both SA and 3 star A. Right, so many basic questions for results in additive combinatorics have the form that you look at a sufficiently dense set A in your group, then the subsum set should contain a special element, well, typically 0 or maybe a square or a cubic or something like that, or it should contain a large structure like a long arithmetic progression or the group itself. And the main question here is to find the threshold for the dense, for this word dense, right? So how dense is it? So I will mostly talk about the basic group of integers and ZP when P is a large prime. So you take residue mode P. Occasionally, I will mention other groups, but mostly you're working with these two cases. So here's a few examples. Most of them come from the 60s. Very well known. And there's Zinsworth ZIP theorem saying that you take a sequence of 2p minus 1 elements in ZP, then you find p elements which sum up to 0. Right? And it's the tie result, because if you take the sequence of p minus 1, 0 and p minus 1, 1, then that gives you 2p minus 2 elements, and no p of them add up to 0, right? And there's a lovely proof, algebraic proof of this theorem, very nice. You can find it in the Handbook of Combinatorics, or also in our book with Terry Tao, chapter 9. Okay, so another, well, no problem is Olson problem, which is also back in the 60, that you want to take a set. Well, what is the largest size of the set so that no subset sum up to zero? So, and the construction here is that you can take well, all the small elements mod p, right? So you take element from 1 to roughly square root of 2p. And then the reason is that you cannot find a zero subsum is that the sum of every element is less than p, right? So that, and there are results saying that the square root p is the right order of magnitude, even very close to this bar. We will see the result later. Okay, so example 3 also from Olson. Then now we want to take a set when the sub by the subset sum you can represent everything, right? So every residue mod p. And his result saying that is square root of 4p minus 3. Well, it was improved to, I think, maybe minus 7 or something. But it's about the right order. Well, asymptotically the right answer. And the construction here is that you can take element from minus m to m when the sum of element from 1 to m is less than p over 2. Right? So the picture is something like this. So here are the elements of ZP, and you take this small section here, this small section here, and if you add all the positive one, you never get to the middle. You add all the negative one, you never get to the middle. That's how you. That's why you didn't cover the whole group. And it turned out that this the bound given by this construction is a sharp bound. So let me go to the another basic group of integers. There's a nice conjecture of Fogman back in also in the 60s, saying that if you take a dense enough increasing sequence of positive integers with asymptotic density, say 1,000 times square root n, so that means that for big enough n, the intersection of a with the integer from 1 to n is at least 1,000 times square root n, then the subset sum should contain an infinite arithmetic progression. And there's a construction by Cassels showing that square root n is best possible. You need at least this density. Another problem concerning the integers is Edler's problem on square free set. So the question is that how many elements you can take from 1 to n so that no subsum equal a square, right? And the construction here give you something of order n to the 1/3, because you can take an arithmetic progression of difference q when q is a prime and k is about square root q. So if you even you add all this thing up, you cannot end up with q square. It's still less than q square. That's why you didn't get. That's why you don't have a square there. Yeah. So the first square you can get by adding the elements of this sequence is q square, right? But k is so small that forbid that. Okay. Yeah. So there are various techniques that, and many results. Concerning these problems and many other, and you can use combinatorial technique, harmonic analysis, algebraic, etc. So today I want to talk about well, one sort of unified approach that solves a lot of these problems in a sort of convenient way. Namely, you can do it via the structure of sets. So the idea is the following. Well, if you well keep in mind that your goal is to find the sharp threshold for the property, right? So what you do is that you start with a set A which is not that dense yet, but relatively dense. Well, maybe half of the threshold or something. And now we assume that the subset sum doesn't contain the desired object, and using that fact, you show that A will have a very special structure. Right? So you take the inverse direction and show the structure of A. Or another way to proceed is just simply show that when A is relatively dense, again close to the threshold, then ether itself have a special structure, right? And then, well, because you are not at the threshold yet, you can spin F elements to A, and we use this element with the already existing structure to get whatever desired object you want to get, right? So it will give a new proof for several existing results, and well, the strong thing here is that it will classify all the extremal constructions, and it will show a few open ones. Okay. Okay, so let me give you one famous theorem, structural theorem
of
Feynman as an example. So there's a very important notion in additive combinatorics that come up in many, many problems, is the notion of arithmetic, generalized arithmetic progression. So you can see the definition there. Yeah, but the best way to think about it is it's just to think of it as a lattice, a lattice box, and then you map it to the real line or to your additive group using the linear map defined here. So that's just the image of a lattice. And we say that the arithmetic progression is proper if the map is 1-to-1. So Feynman theorem, which is the cornerstone of additive combinatorics, say that if you take a subset of a torsion free group and assume that the sum set is small, so A plus A is less than a constant times A, right, then actually A should be a dense subset of a box like this. Well, one direction is trivial. If you start with a dense set of a box, then when you add it to itself, then it will be a dense set of a box twice bigger. But the volume of the bigger box and the smaller box are comparable. It's only a constant apart. So actually, in one direction is trivial, but Feynman theorem saying that the inverse direction is also true. So that characterizes set with small sum completely. Okay, so, well, it turns out is that one can develop theorems of similar spirit. Well, at the technical level, it will be quite different from here. Sometimes you will not see any boxes at all. But the spirit is the same, that you have some extremal case or some special case, and you prove that the special case is actually the only one. You can have those theorem for subset sums, and instead of just A plus A, and that helps to solve a lot of problems. Yeah. So one meta theorem we found out in work with Andre Semeredi and my student Nguyen in the last few years is the following. So let me say it in the zero sum free problem, so namely that you cannot create zero as a subset sum of the set A, right? So remember, one of the construction I give for ZP is that you can take number from 1 to some n when you have 1 plus 2 plus n less than p, right? Then this set is clearly zero sum free, because you can, well, any subset sum never go back to P, so it cannot give you zero. And it turns out that it's essentially the only reason for this to happen. So if you have a subset or even a subsequence of ZP, and it doesn't contain zero at the subsum, then actually it looks more or less look like that picture. So the formal theorem says something like this. Well, first of all, zero sum free is a property which is invariant under dilation. So you can multiply every element with the same number x, say. So after you have a proper dilation, then your set look like a subset of this guy. So they don't sum up to P, and a very small set somewhere else. And by small, I mean it is considerably smaller than square root P, which is threshold. And you can prove the same thing for other situation like L star A, or when A is a sequence instead of a set. Just more messy, but the same result holds. Okay. So you can application, for instance, from here you can easily reprove the Erdős-Grünewald ZIF, and we can also have classification. So Erdős-Grünewald ZIF give you the classification should be the set of two elements like this. So you don't have zero at sum of p elements. There's the earlier result of Gao, Patnigrahi, and Tandurai saying that if you will have a set of 2p over two elements and no p add up to zero, then it's basically a sequence of two elements with high multiplicities. So we could show that actually the situation occur much earlier. Once you have slightly more than p elements, that's already the case. So you need at least p element, because you, by definition, you want to find p of them with zero sum. But if you have anything, well, epsilon p more, then actually basically you will find two elements that cover more or less the whole set. Okay, so another application. More or less you can read from the picture the result. We want to know what is the threshold for the size of the zero sum free set. So how many elements the set can have without having zero as a subsum. So Samaridi proved it is the constant times square root p, and Ohlenstein proved the constant is 2, and Hadumin and Zemmour proved that the constant is square root 2, which is the assumed which is the right constant, but I need some extra log p there. And just use the picture, you can easily deduce that that number is whatever it should be, namely if you say n is the largest number, so that you add 1 from n and you have something less than p, then mostly n will be the answer for the question, at least the p have some this very weird satisfying some very weird identity here, and in that case you can have one more element because of this construction. Well, this also come out from the proof that, so you just use the idea, then the proof give you the construction, you don't have to invent it. Okay. So some other thing of that type. Now if I go a little bit far away from the threshold, so the threshold gave me square root 2p elements, right? Now assume that I have only square root p 2p times, say, 0.9 elements, then actually you can change the picture here a little bit. You don't need everything on the right-hand side. You can have a little set on the left-hand side as well. On the other hand, you can characterize that situation. So there's the theorem of Desvier saying that in that case, well, the right-hand side can add up to a little bit more than 1. But the left-hand side will be small. And a little bit more, he could prove it is p to the minus 1/4. Well, I normalize by dividing by p, right? And I use the integer norm there. But if you don't normalize, that gives you p to the 3/4. So the sum of the right-hand side can be as large as p plus p to the 3/4. And it was conjectured that you can do actually p plus square root p, which is the right arrow term. And again, with the meta theorem that we have, the characterization theorem we have, we can prove that with André and Nguyen. That also give you the characterization of a zero sum free set, which is not as large as the threshold, but relatively large. Yeah, so of course there's been an open problem here. That means what is the threshold for relatively? That we don't know. So when this situation start to kick in. Okay, so similar thing you can do with a complete set, namely a set that represents every element of the group as a subsum, right? Again, we have this situation. Now, the picture is that we have a set like this, both on the right and on the left, and they never add up to P over 2, right? So that set will give you, well, will not give you the middle and the middle element of the group. And so what we can show is that, yeah, basically after a proper dilation, your set will be a subset of that and a small set of psi, I don't know, square root less than square root P, P to the 6 over 13. And then everything is the same. We can have a structural theorem as before. So there was a version of the Desire theorem I showed before for incomplete set, and here and of Desire and Freiman, and they also show that now if you allow to have, now it's not square root 2 anymore but 2, and if you allow little bit less than 1 minus epsilon times 2p, to square root p, then you can cover the middle, but then you will have error term. And again, you can show that what the error term is. Okay. So a few words about sequences. Okay, so now the situation here is that you have a sequence, meaning that you can repeat elements, right? And we condition on the fact that you cannot repeat more than m times. And now you want your set to be incomplete, namely that you will not cover everything as a subsum, then the structure would be something like this, right? So you spin star from zero and go outward and put as much as multiplicity on the guy close to zero, and at the end, well, we put the leftover. And the goal is that the goal is still that keep the sum of this guy, even with multiplicity, as small as possible, right? So it will never cover the middle one. That's the basic construction. And so we can prove with Nguyen that actually any incomplete sequence can be decomposed into the subset of that multiset, and again, something with small cardinality. Right. And that will solve most of the question in this sense. Okay. Well, there's some other application is that you can apply the characterization theorem for counting problem. Right? So, for instance, if you want to count the number of zeros, some free set, then you know that the main chunk will come from this construction, right? So you just have to find set that the sum of the elements is less than p, so it gives you just a problem of counting the number of representations of number less than p, right? And then you get the formula from some book from enumerative combinatorics, right? And the small part, which is the p to the 6 over 13, will go to the linear row of 1 here, which is where we hide all the cheat. Right? So you can do the same thing even with the high multiplicity in the sequence. So for all kind of counting problem, it gives you an asymptotic, at least in the term of the power. Of course, there would be question that what really happened with the little number of 1, and for that, I don't know. What is the right order of magnitude of the little number of 1 is still an open question. Okay, so let me say a few words now about a general abelian group. Again, we care about the problem that we have an incomplete set, namely that you cannot represent every element of the group. Okay, so there's the fairly well-known conjecture of Diderik back in the 75, say the following: if P is the smallest prime divisor of the group, and H is composite, then this number is H plus P minus 2, and it was proved by Gao and Hamidoun in 99. And you can see that why this p minus 2 come from, because Well, if you take any subgroup H, which have a prime index, right? And if the intersection of A in H span everything in span the whole subgroup H, then the rest cannot have more than q minus 1 element. Because of this fact, you will have a sequence of q minus 1 non-zero element in the quotient group, which is ZQ. And for that, you can, and using that, you can represent everything. So you get back the whole group. Right. So if you have a subgroup of prime index, and after factorizing that, you will come to the problem in ZQ. And now you can repeat all the things we had before. Simple. Okay, so the notion of interest here is subcompleteness. Namely, I say a set A is subcomplete if there is a subgroup of prime index when A intersect H, span everything in H. Right. So when you know that the set is subcomplete, then actually the problem is solved, right? Because you only have to understand the thing outside. This guy in ZQ, and this is a problem in ZQ that we already studied before. Right. So the problem here is that, well, you have one to find a threshold for subcompleteness, and there's a few interesting partial results here that Gao, Hamidoun, Lado, and Serra show that if you are very close to the Dirac conjecture, namely P over P plus 2 times H, then actually, well, the threshold is actually H plus P minus 2, right? So, but you are quite close there, then you can get subcompleteness. So, I can prove under some weak assumption is that actually there is a threshold in a strong sense, namely that you look at the prime decomposition of G, and you look at the second largest prime divisor, then the threshold happens at the point H divided by P2. So here, 1 plus epsilon cannot be replaced by 1 minus epsilon. So we had some good understanding there. Oop, what happened? Okay, so now a few quick words about now I go to the case of integers, group of integers. and so there is, and it is a second line of idea, right? So before, what I try to use is that if A is relatively dense, and if A does not contain what we get, then A will have a strong structure, right? So now I use an even a simple even simpler idea, namely that A is relatively dense, then SA itself already have a structure. Right? So I will not say anything about A, I say directly for SA. Well, one example is a theorem of Feynman and Sarkozy independently, saying that if A is a subset of integer from 1 to n and have at least, say, 100 times square root n log n elements, then SA contain an arithmetic progression proportional to A square. And clearly you cannot do better than A square, right? Because if A is just the interval from 1 to A, then you will have A square over 2. There's a nice application of this which give you close to Fogman conjecture, namely Fogman conjecture saying that if you have a sequence, infinite sequence of density 1,000 times square root n, then the subset sum contains an infinite arithmetic progression, right? So Luchak and Schön and Hajvari proved that, well, if you have a little bit more than square root n, namely 1,000 times square root n log n, then you can have an infinite arithmetic progression. And that improved earlier by Erdős and Fogman. So with Andre a few years ago, we can remove the log, which actually quite a lot of work, but somehow it happens. And so we have a sharp bound for the length of for the threshold of being containing a long arithmetic progression of length a square. Right? And using that, we can prove the Fogman conjecture entirely. And there's also some related result of Chang that he showed you can perform a conjecture under a strong condition that instead of density c times square root n, you take the mean of c times square root n and n. So that means initial, well, we set c to be 1,000 or something. So that means that the first 1,000 number should be there. So initially you have a long arithmetic progression. And then this is somewhat simplify the situation quite a bit. Okay, so the theorem I proved with Andrea is sharp in both sense. Well, first of all, we cannot have an arithmetic progression of length more than a square. And second, it also the bound on a is sharp. So we need something like this. And the fact is that you cannot replace capital C by smaller c. Well, capital mean 1,000, smaller c mean 1/1,000. Because one can construct a set of size square root n over 100 so that SA does not contain any arithmetic progression of length n to the 3/4. So it's not a square. On the other hand, actually what we found out there is quite interesting that if it do not contain a long arithmetic progression, then it does contain a large proper generalized arithmetic progression. For instance, if I assume that A has density now 1,000 times cubic root of n, then it either contains an arithmetic progression of length CA square, which is best possible, or a proper arithmetic progression of dimension 2 and volume A cube. And the second guy is also sharp. Situation like that can occur. If you take A itself to be a gap of dimension 2, right? So one coordinate will have like n to the 1/6, the other n to the 1/6. And SA will be a gap, which is the dilate of this with a factor of A, which will give you n half in each direction. And then the volume of this guy will be n, right? So n half times n half is n, and that is n cube, a to the cube. And there are theorems like that in 4 when you can replace 3 by any fixed number. And so one application quick here is the address square free hoop. I misspell. Square free problem. So how many elements you can take from the set from 1 to n so that no subset sum is the square, and we show the construction saying that you can do n to the cubic root. There are partial results by Edwards, which is just slightly better than n. Alan Freiman do n to the 3/2, n to the 2/3. Sarkozy do roughly square root n. And with Nguyen, we can do n cubic n to the log n. I think we can remove the log 2, but it takes some time. Maybe next talk. But. So finally, still have 10 minutes actually. So here's an application or another kind of theorems of a little bit different spirit. Again, I look at the subset sum. SA, but now I do not look at it as a set, but I look at it as a multi-set. Right? So, if A had n elements, then you can have 2 to the n subsets, right? So I take all the 2 to the n sums and look at them as a multi-set, right? So I write every number there, and I look at the largest multiplicity in SA. So for example, if I take the sequence of O1, right, so what I can get here is actually the discrete Gaussian distribution, right? So and the it's not exactly right. The highest multiplicity will be n choose n over 2, right? So that is the largest binomial coefficient. which is, well, we care only about the order of magnitude, which will be of order of magnitude 2 to the n over square root n. So 2 to the n is the size of a whole set, right? So we have 2 to the n sums. And it turns out, actually, you cannot do better than this. So the square root n is the best possible factor you can write there. Namely, there's a famous theorem of Leland-Wood Erdős. Well, actually, I should have write Leland-Wood-Oxford Erdős, because Leland-Wood and Oxford proved it first, a slightly weaker result than Erdős proved the result I cited here. Namely, that you take any set and any sequence of n non-zero numbers, then the highest multiplicity is 2 to the n over square root n. And we have a whole line of extensions of this result under several additional assumptions or in higher dimensions. Yeah, it was very big in combinatorics 20 years ago, 25 years ago. So a few years ago, Terry and I looked at this in a different direction, again in the structural direction. Namely, now we assume that the multiplicity is large, say larger than say 2n to the divided by some polynomial in n. Right? So not necessarily square root n, but maybe n to 100. Then we found out that in this case, the sequence A itself cannot be is very restrictive. Namely, it should be contained in the generalized arithmetic progression of small volumes. So say 3 years ago, we have some very poor dependence on C prime. On C, some sort of very similar dependence on the Friedman theorem, that we, well, one thing will be exponential in the other. But now we understand it much more, and we can have more or less the sharp dependence between these parameters. So the final application, which, well, it looks surprising as the first look, is that, well, it is an application which is not similar to the others. It's an application from in some other fields of mathematics. And so let me, well, I need a quick introduction here. It comes from the theory of random matrices. So a random matrix is that, well, it's just a matrix where the entries are random variable. For instance, you can look at a random psi matrix. So for every position in the matrix, you flip a coin and then write 1 or minus 1 correspondingly. If you have a matrix, one important thing people want to look at is the distribution of the eigenvalues. Right? And there is a conjecture dated back to the 50s. It probably came out of Wigner project on semicircle law, but it is the brother of it, is the whole, not semicircle, but the whole circle. And it say that, well, you look at the eigenvalue of this matrix, they are complex number, of course, somewhere in the plane. And I normalize, well, we normalize them so that by a factor of 1 over square root n, which turned out to be a right normalization, then all of this guy will flow into the unit disk. And the conjecture is that the limiting distribution of this point will be uniform on the disk. And there's been a lot of previous work on this by, well, the first few guys are mathematical physicists, and then probability people, apply math people, and so on. And so Terry and I can prove that actually the conjecture holds under a slightly stronger assumption that only, well, you not only need the variance, but you also need the 2 plus epsilon moment to be bounded. And that is sort of the contract, well, it's sort of the application when we started to, well, study this thing 4 or 5 years ago. We never think of, but I think, well, that's the main power of and of additive combinatorics that can lead you to an expected application, and we hope to see much more from here. Okay, thank you very much.